Welcome to the Chicago Football Podcast. This is episode 11. I am Arthur Arkish, normally the co-host, but sitting in the pilot seat today. Kevin Fishbane is jetting back from San Diego, so I have brought in a little extra help. Normally our closer, Mr. Hub Arkish, is gonna do extended relief today and join in and get through this podcast with us. So, Hub, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm just trying to get the image of Fishbane jetting back from San Diego, probably sitting next to P. Diddy and Jay-Z. He better not be because we didn't pay for first class, but we will try and somehow muddle through without Mr. Fishbane today.
I'm hoping we're going to do okay. Kevin has got us all organized, so I'm confident we'll be okay. And just to do some introductions, again, I am Arthur Arkish. On Twitter, you can find me at Arthur Arkish. And Hub, you can find at Hub_Arkish. As usual, we would love it if you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. We prefer positive ratings, but we can handle both ways. Constructive criticism is also welcome, I suppose. And Hub, the opener there, Umphrey's McGee, the song Glory, and this is in fact a glorious Monday for Bears fans coming off their first primetime victory of the John Fox era, a close one over the Chargers. Just your general thoughts on the Bears eking out a win.
Well, I think as always this season, you have to be careful. It was two really bad football teams at time playing some really bad football. But there were some really good things in it for the Chicago Bears. And I think as long as Bears fans are realistic, understand that this is clearly a rebuilding season, I think you can look at the Charger game and say they're a little bit ahead of schedule. Because at this point, Arthur, I can't really foresee a formula or a plan in which Jay Cutler isn't the Bears quarterback for the next 2, 3, 4 years. I think he has shown enough at this point under John Fox, under Adam Gase, under Dowell Loggins. There continues to be a lot of debate as to who should get all the credit for it. Probably Cutler should get some of it. That he's going to be the guy. And the hardest part of rebuilding is finding that franchise quarterback. The thing that caught me last night at different points I was listening and watching through different avenues, but did hear a little bit of Chucky late in the game, John Gruden, who, you know, if you don't believe he is the number one quarterback guru in the world, just ask him. And he ran out of superlatives for Cutler. And as you watch the game and as you watch the tape, you could see why. We have known for six seasons now, into our seventh, that Jay Cutler has every tangible you could possibly want in an NFL quarterback. And in the Charger game, which started badly, a pick six, which I'm pretty sure was as much Alshon Jeffrey's fault as it was Cutler's when you look at the tape and see what happened. But nonetheless, that dreaded Jay pick six. Here was the chance on primetime for the old bad Jay to come back, and instead the new Jay came riding in on his white horse and rallied him to victory, clearly outplayed Phillip Rivers. He is close to that designation of elite quarterback. He's not going to get there for a year or two. He's got to do it with a good team, but right now he's playing about as well as some of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been fun to watch over the past handful of weeks, really since he's gotten back on the field from the hamstring injury, the way he's overcome adversity and has really come into his own. Now, I guess we can have the conversation at a later time. As you mentioned, who gets all the credit? Of course, Jay gets a ton of it, but Adam Gase, and his name continues to pop up more and more as head coaching vacancies are already arising. So we'll obviously have to keep an eye on that, but we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. That's for somewhere closely down the road. So good stuff for sure. It's a lot for the Bears to build on, and we'll, as we do every week, get into some of the positives, negatives, in a moment that mattered in our three and out section.
One, two, three. I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five.
Lisa,
three.
Three idiots.
And thank you to our producer, Mr. Dan Mott, who's always keeping us up to date with all the fun bump-ins. And here we are in our three and out, Hub. So, of course, we start with one positive. I know you just talked about Jay Cutler, and certainly you can go in that direction. But what do you think for one positive from this game?
We got to go with Jeremy Langford. He's drafted in the fourth round, and the hope that you have a steal and the hope that he could eventually be the heir apparent to Matt Forte. Nobody wants or expected or predicted it to be week nine of the 2015 of his rookie season, but he was forced into action. I have no idea what the Kadeem Carey start was all about, and knowing our relationship with the coaching staff, we're probably never going to find out. It was kind of a joke, though, because Kadeem Carey has proven to me he is not an NFL running back. He had 28 yards on seven carries. He averaged 4 yards a pop. He broke into some holes that were there. Jeremy Langford did it on the ground. He made one sensational catch, had another one, 142 yards of total offense. But the most impressive thing about him last night, you go back and watch that tape, his pass protection, his blitz pickup, it was outstanding. And so, you know, fortunately you got a game where there's four or five really good things, but to pick one for this segment, I think you got to, we've started with Cutler. I think next you got to go to Langford.
That's the same thing. I saw the pass pro was excellent. And, I have two theories on the Kadeem Carey start. First of all, we know John Fox a little reluctant to play rookies. Perhaps Carey's not exactly a grizzled veteran, but maybe he threw him the nod for that reason. The other one was just to make us all in the media look silly for predicting that Jeremy Langford was going to get his first NFL start.
Yeah, you're young in the business, Arthur. John Fox doesn't care enough about us to do something to make us look silly. It wasn't that. I think there's a third possibility that might make the most sense. They knew he was going to get the lion's share of the action, but why not let him go out on special teams, then have Carey take a couple pops, get the game going. You don't have that immediate burst of pressure of taking the first handoff of the game. My guess is that that's what it was about. The thing is, it's not as if Kadeem Carey has been close. He hasn't dressed until last night. So it's not like they suddenly got in practice and said, hey, we got to give Carey some snaps with Langford. I think it was really to protect the kid. And I think that assuming that Forte can't go at St. Louis, you'll probably see less, if none, of Kadeem Carey, because we also saw Anton Smith for the first time.
That's right. And we just saw Kadeem Carey with just two carries in the second half. So clearly that was I don't know if it was a bit of a, you know, a mirage or whatever it was, the reason he was in there. So one positive for me, Lamar Houston. It was Willie Young who got the start in place of Sam Acho, but it was Lamar Houston who helped cement the victory for the Bears on the Chargers' final drive, obviously with a couple of sacks. He totaled four quarterback hits. And say what you will about the Chargers' offensive line, but their right tackle, Joe Barksdale, has been the one constant there. And Lamar Houston just abused him with power twice. And it was a good thing because he obviously had a couple bad offsides penalties too, but obviously the two critical sacks of Phillip Rivers outweighed those jumping offsides penalties.
I agree with you. It's a good call. The one major concern I did have is when after the first sack he jumped up celebrating again. I was like, no, Lamar, don't do that. You know, but he survived it this time. So
he did. Hub, one negative, obviously, you know, in a win, whatever it is, hopefully nothing too severe, but what do you have on that side?
Well, you know, again, it's part of the youth and the rebuilding programs, the dumb penalties. I don't know what Kyle Long did to get that unsportsmanlike penalty. I watched the play. I watched the replay. He never touched the defender. He was talking to the official, but I don't think he can get flagged for talking to an official. I don't know why he got it, but it was dumb. And then he had a bad holding penalty later in the game. Jarvis Jenkins, a really stupid roughing penalty. And so you can live with this. This is your. These are the guys who may be the core going forward. They've got to learn, but it was prime time. They were excited. Jarvis Jenkins actually didn't play as well last night as he had. The whole defensive line, as a matter of fact, Eddie Goldman got worked last night. So I think the dumb penalties and the play of the front three, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that unsportsmanlike conduct potentially cost the Bears 3 points, knocked him out of field goal range. And just on Jarvis Jenkins, I don't think he's played quite as well the past couple weeks. So I don't know if opponents are doing something differently, but the Bears need to see him get closer to quarterbacks until they find a consistent rush elsewhere. My negative is very obvious, but it's Robbie Gould. Going back to last week, he has three misses in a row now after being just automatic in the first five games. So with Robbie, you don't really want to worry about it just yet, but like I said, as good as he was and as small as the Bears' margin for error is, you kind of are starting to wonder. One of them was a chip shot, 34, 36 yards, something like that.
Well, I think you're being fair. I have no problem with you doing it. But again, this is where maybe just being so old and having been around for a while, I wouldn't worry about Robbie. You know, he is historically one of the top five accuracy kickers in the history of the NFL. Yeah, I guess even kickers hit a slump. It was frustrating, and it could have cost him a game. But pretty confident that he'll bounce back pretty well.
Yeah, I think you could argue he was the Bears' most consistent player over the first 5 weeks, and certainly a veteran like that deserves the benefit of the doubt. So we'll see if Gold bounces back and how quickly. Hub, one moment that mattered. It seemed like there were a ton of them in this game that could have tipped the scales either way. What are you honing in on?
Well, there was one that mattered a whole bunch more than the others, and that is illegal receiver downfield. You know, for all the celebrating and all the joy of the big win over the San Diego Chargers, if they don't get downfield on that play, the Bears lose the football game. It took the winning points off the board. You know, granted, it changes the dynamic. I suppose the Bears, after the touchdown, could have gone for two, maybe gotten it to overtime. But you're assuming a whole bunch, most likely without that really dumb penalty. And here's why it's really dumb, okay? Because the play did get extended. Phillip Rivers is scrambling out of the pocket. It looks like he's coming to the line of scrimmage. But if you're on the San Diego Chargers team, you should know that Phillip Rivers hasn't run out of the pocket in like 5 years now. So no excuse for that illegal receiver downfield.
Yeah, it was close to changing, you know, obviously not only the outcome of the game, but a pretty good job on Antonio Gates. He was the guy on the receiving end of that nullified touchdown. So Bears certainly got a break on that. The moment that mattered for me, I'm going with the way Jay Cutler immediately responded following his second first-half turnover, the pick six to Jason Verrett, which you alluded to looked like a miscommunication, maybe a bad route by Alshon Jeffrey, but it was the very next play when they went right back in that direction. They saw that Verrett was sitting on that short comeback route, so what do? They try a go, and Jeffrey gets downfield for, I think, 47, 50-ish yards. It was huge, I think, for the confidence of Cutler, certainly huge for the Bears to go down and get a score on the board, and you know, it was positive to see. It's been mostly a terrific rapport, even right out of the gate between Alshon and Cutler, but after a few small hiccups there, nice to see it was only that.
Well, the other thing that was huge about the play is it was the play that Jason Verrett pulled the groin muscle on.
Absolutely.
And because he had the better of Alshon Jeffrey until that point in the game. And, of course, Alshon took off after that, 10 catches for 151 yards, I believe.
And that Jason Verrett's a feisty little player, only 5'9", gives up 6 inches to Alshon, but I like the way he competes.
Looked good, and remember, Bears fans, selected 15 picks after Kyle Fuller in the first round of last year's draft, right now playing better football than Kyle Fuller.
Right. At this point, we are pleased to welcome in Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange and 590 KFNS, talkstl.com, to talk a little Bears-Rams. Howard, how are you doing? It's Arthur Arkish and Hub Arkish.
Hub and Dan, that's good. I'm sorry. I got to get all the Arkishes straight.
Yeah, we left Dan home today, but we got Arthur. Arthur's actually driving the ship, man. I'm in the back seat where grandpas go. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Great being with you guys.
Howard, it's a pleasure to have you on, and obviously we want to get into a little Rams-Bears discussion, but you know, the hot topic this week is certainly Mike Zimmer calling out the Rams a little bit, LaMarcus Joyner's you know, questionable, I won't call it dirty until I get your reaction, but we'll call it a questionable hit that, of course, knocked Teddy Bridgewater out on Sunday. What is the local reaction to that play and your take on what happened?
Well, I mean, the local reaction is that there's a little surprise that the reaction on the Minnesota side and some nationally is that it's making it out to be like the worst hit on a sliding quarterback that anybody has ever seen. And when you look at it and really watch the replays, in my mind, from three different angles, Joyner looked like he was trying to avoid him when he went into the slide. And, you know, Zimmer's setting insinuations like he was targeted. Well, if he was targeted, he would have just hit him straight on. I mean, but he almost somersaulted over him. He was to his side, that's a Bridgewater's side, and his arm or his shoulder, you know, hit his head as he was going down. So it was rightfully so that he should have got a penalty. But I'm intrigued, guys, because nationally, I mean, here's Aqib Talib, who's suspended by the NFL for a game for, you know, almost, you know, poking a guy's eye after it plays over. And hardly anyone's talking about that, I guess mainly because it was a tight end that he did it to instead of a quarterback. And so I think that, you know, and Jeff Fisher responded somewhat angrily yesterday at his press conference, not only to Zimmer's comments, but also to Rodney Harrison, of all people, to talk about that's the way that Jeff Fisher-type teams play. Well, and Fisher was unbelievable yesterday, where he went down the list and had the number of personal fouls that Rodney Harrison had in his career. And so he said, I think you have to consider the source there. But I think the reaction is probably, you know, there should have been a penalty, but it certainly wasn't the worst hit that I've ever seen from a guy coming in, going after a quarterback, and then he goes into a slide, and sometimes it's just hard to avoid. especially when they go into the slide a little bit late.
Yeah, it is, Howard. I'm going to call this a little bit of the Jerry Jones syndrome, and stay with me for a while I get you to where I'm trying to go here. I think the thing with the Tlaib deal is that he's already been suspended. We don't know what's going to happen with Joyner, so maybe that's why there's more focus here. And, of course, the comments of Zimmer. I think the world of Mike Zimmer. He's one of my favorite coaches in the league. I have a ton of respect for him. This one, I think he probably got a little defensive about his quarterback. Now, when you do look at the replays, they're slowing it down. You're going to see a lot more. I would say from a national and completely, you know, neutral perspective, it certainly is a hit that should be penalized. Probably a fine is coming as well. I do think it's a little questionable because we never know what's in these guys' heads. But how the national folks have made the leap to the Greg Williams coach team, because that's where everybody went, you know, and now all of a sudden we got the Bounty Gate thing coming in. And so here's my Jerry Jones reference. When you want to stand up for Greg Williams, when you want to live with that, this is some of what you're going to get, justifiable or not. I don't think it's justifiable. It didn't look intentional to me, but I do kind of understand where it's coming from because you got too many people trying to put two and two together and get four.
No, it's a good point, and I'll say this, because you know there were those who were reacting what I was saying about it on Twitter Sunday and other things. Well, you're just being a homer. Well, when it because I'm from St. Louis. But when it comes to Greg Williams, I was somewhat defending him back when he was in New Orleans because I thought the whole Bounty thing was totally an exaggeration, was totally overblown in this context. That, you know, stars on the helmet or these little monetary awards that the teams have for players, oh my goodness, are you coaching guys to hit the other guy hard? Oh no, that doesn't happen in football, does it? I mean, it's the culture of the game that exists in defenses everywhere. And that's the way that everyone – it's always funny, huh, because there'll be those who will say, boy, this team isn't playing tough enough. You know, they're not hitting hard enough. Then when they hit hard, they get – they're saying, oh, you're hitting too hard or doing this or doing that. And so I think that is a big thing there. And I, like I said, I thought, you know, the whole Saints thing was overblown. And you hear a lot of players saying that the language there is no different than you can hear in just about any defensive coordinator's meeting room in the nights before games. And so, but you're right. People connect it, and here's Zimmer connecting it, and he's getting up there, talk, and I'm with you. I'm so glad he got his first shot as a head coach, but don't stand up there and talk about, we don't play the game that way, we're clean, we don't make mistakes. I mean, they had Linval Joseph, their defensive tackle, had a forearm to just below Nick Foles' neck during the game, well after he had thrown the football, and he got a penalty for it. Well, I mean, that was a late hit, and I don't know if he'll get fined or not for that. But, you know, don't get up there and say that, oh, that you play the game so lily white and clean, different than anybody else. And so that's essentially what Fisher reacted to yesterday. And he also said, hey, this would be a lesson that don't react emotionally to something without watching the tape and really evaluating it. And I thought it was intriguing, guys, that Adrian Peterson was asked about it, and he said, I thought it was a little wishy-washy, he called it, a little borderline. He said, I like players that play that way. And from watching it, it didn't seem like there was any intent. But, you know, he did catch him, you know, with his arm or his shoulder when he was going down. But he didn't extend the arm or his shoulder. He had it kind of tucked into his side. So he didn't really make an overt action with his arm or anything to do that hit. So I'll be curious. Yeah, there probably will be a fine from the league. But like I said, I'll be curious if Linval Joseph gets fined, because I'm sure plenty of Mike Zimmer's defensive players have maybe a time or two gone a little bit over the line in hitting an offensive player.
You know, Howard, you and I, we're old timers at this point. I don't want to get too philosophical, and Lord knows I don't want to get existential, but you've really got everybody ignoring the elephant in the room, which is that, you know, the commissioner's worried about his powers and they're worried about getting to Los Angeles and they're worried about length of games and officiating. The game has gotten so violent and so dangerous that the league has no answers. Youth participation is down. High school programs are being shut down because parents don't want to let their kids play. I don't know what the future of this game is 8, 10, 15 years from now. And really, that is at the root of this conversation that we're having, because you're absolutely right. Fans pay to see guys get knocked out. That's what this game has always been about. But now it's become life-threatening, and nobody has any answers.
No, it's a great point. And we all know how through NFL films and a lot of that, the NFL once glorified it all. And that's the essence of it. And yeah, I think you're, none of us know, you know, what the future truly is of the game, but it is what it is. And football is always by its nature going to be a violent collision sport that with big, strong guys going at it on, you know, on fields every week, playing for a lot of money and a lot of, you know, focus and a lot of pressure and all those things that, you know, you're going to play the game a certain way. I do think a certain amount of it has been reduced by what they're doing. And yet, as much as people say it's good for the game, you'll still have the defensive players complaining and saying, boy, they don't let us play football. And so there's a obviously there's a fine line that exists in all this. Quite frankly, I'm surprised. We talk about the injuries and we talk about that. I'm surprised that there aren't even more injuries than there are. Sometimes there's hits and things that happen in the game. You go, man, how's that guy even getting up? And yet they're conditioned for it, or they do it and they move on. But it's, I don't think there's a whole lot more that you can do while still having it be tackle football. It's like we said, it's just the nature of the sport. I don't know that it'll ever truly go away, because I think there'll always be enough to play it, but it'll be interesting, Hub, and it'll be well beyond our years, probably, and, you know, 10, 15, 25 years where the game is.
Chatting with Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange and 590 KFNS TalkSTL.com. And we do want to take just a few minutes, Howard, to preview the Bears and the Rams. And I guess we got to start with Todd Gurley. That certainly is what everyone is talking about, who everyone is talking about with regards to the Rams. What has been your biggest surprise, impression, takeaway from Gurley's early start, beyond obviously how electrifying he's been? And do the Rams have enough other offensive pieces? Is there enough confidence in Nick Foles to supplement what Gurley can bring to the table?
The first point, the thing that surprised me, that has surprised me, is the carry load that he is getting in all these games. He started out, obviously, the first game, he got 6 for 9, didn't start the game, was just get his feet wet. And I thought it would be gradual. You know, you give him the ball 10, 15 times, that many touches as they try to build it up. But they just went right for it. I mean, he's had one game with 30. Sunday he had 24. I mean, he's getting a bunch of carries. In fact, I think the average is over 20 in the games that he has started, or at least right around 20. That's been the surprise to me, is the load that he is carrying. But he doesn't seem affected by it. I mean, his rehab was amazing, and he's showing that on a week-to-week basis. Not surprised with the explosiveness, because we all knew that's what Todd Gurley can do, and that's what he brings to the offense. And it was interesting, guys, because Sunday was the first game that he didn't have that huge explosive run. And at one point in about the fourth quarter, one of the Fox announcers said, boy, it's been kind of a quiet day with nothing for Todd Gurley. And he'd run for 90 yards at that, or close to 90. He ended up with 89. So he still had a decent day. But when Todd Gurley only goes for 89, you're going, oh, boy, not that good a day for him. So he's been, you know, really amazing in what he's done in this limited time so far. The huge question, like you said, is what they can do elsewhere. They're not a very good passing team. Tavon Austin, he and Gurley have become basically 50% of the team's offense. They use Austin as much running the ball as they do catching it. But after that, Foles has been very uneven. He's one of the worst third down passers in the NFL, completing less than 50% of his passes. In fact, guys, the last three games, the Rams are 4 for 37 on third down. It's been brutal, and a lot of them aren't third and longs. A lot of them are third and short, which is one of the reasons they went out and signed Wes Welker. And I don't know how much he has left or what he can do coming into a team halfway through the season, but they believe on those third and fours, third and fives, that he could be a guy that gets a first down. Because if they can do that, if they can extend drives and score some more points, this can be a really good football team, because their defense is excellent. At home, and this is a little note to the Bears fans, at home in four games, the defense has only allowed 2 touchdowns total. So far at home, and they haven't allowed that many overall either. And so with the defense and the running game, if they can get any semblance of consistency in a passing game, they can be. I think they can be a real good football team.
Howard, one place where the Rams would seem to enjoy a huge advantage in the matchup would be with that defensive front against a makeshift Bears offensive line. I'm pretty sure, though, Robert Quinn was inactive Sunday. What do you know about his status? And just a little heads up for you, you ain't going to recognize Jay Cutler, man. We're trying to figure out how it happened, but Jay Cutler is suddenly playing like the quarterback everybody expected him to be his first 9 years in the league.
Yeah, I've seen that. Saw last night, and it was funny when I was looking at those third down numbers. I saw that Cutler is up, I think, in the, around sixth or seventh in the NFL, at least going into last night's game. So yeah, he's playing pretty well. Alshon Jeffrey is tremendous, and of course they've done it without Brandon Marshall. So that's been pretty impressive. But you're right about that front four. Quinn did not play on Sunday, and the feeling is it was just more of take a week off. The previous two games he had played with a knee injury, didn't play as many snaps as normal. I think they just felt, let's give a week off here. They believe that he'll be back, and that's important, obviously, for that defense. But they are playing without Chris Long also. But that line still gets after it. They're getting good play from Mark Barron, who drafted as a safety. He's actually playing linebacker. And their secondary is playing well also. Even though they allow, you'll look at the stats and you'll see a very large completion percentage against them, close to 70%. But the way teams play them is, because of the pass rush, get back quickly, get rid of the ball, and throw it short most of the time. The average yards per completion against the Rams pass defense is 9.8. Which is pretty low. So it's an interesting team, and I think it should be an interesting game on Sunday because of, like you said, the matchups and the way both these teams are playing now.
It should be fascinating, especially the Bears are a big-time screen team with the wide receivers and the quick passing game, so it'll be interesting to see how that matches up. Howard, just on the way out, and thank you again for the time. I saw an amazing stat. I believe that prior to the loss Sunday in Minnesota, the Rams were above 500 this late in the season for the first time in almost a decade. Pretty amazing stuff. Just discuss how Jeff Fisher's young team should respond from falling a little bit short in I think, one of the kind of higher one of the more magnified games they had played in quite a while.
Yeah, that would have been big if they had been able to find a way to win that one, and it would have put them at 5-3. And you're right, it was the first time since 2006 that the Rams were over 500 in the month of November. And of course, it only lasted 1 week of November, and now they're back to 500. But they still look at this schedule, and they look at games. And I always hate the term "winnable games" because we know how this league is and how it's tough to beat anybody in the NFL. But they had a very difficult first five games, which I thought they were doing. They did well to come out of it at 2-3, and they still have Tampa Bay. They still have Detroit. Of course, the Bears. I'm sure the Bears look at this the same way the Rams do. This is a winnable game. And so they feel they're on the right track. But like I said, they've got to solve third down. They're playing with a very, very young offensive line that has two rookies on it. And on Sunday, in fact, with Rob Havenstein, the rookie right tackle, he wasn't able to play. And so they started another rookie, Andrew Dinell, fourth-round pick, at left guard and moved Garrett Reynolds over to right tackle. So that line is starting to come together. Still needs be a little bit better on pass blocking, but they feel they're definitely on the right track. But the passing game is the one big question right now, and if that doesn't improve, then there'll be a team that wins a game here, loses a game there, and probably won't be any better than where they are right now, which is 500.
Great stuff, Howard. We really do appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday. That is Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange at 590 KFNS, and we will talk to you very soon.
All right, guys, anytime. Enjoyed it. Take care.
Take care, Howard.
And, Hub, there's a lot of good stuff there. Certainly we knew about the young, talented Rams team. It was interesting to hear Howard vehemently disagree, frankly, with some of the outrage regarding the LaMarcus Joyner hit. And it was interesting. We hadn't discussed it off the air. It was interesting to hear you largely agree.
Well, I just – it's the way you are taught to play the game. And the league is trying to legislate against it with penalties and fines, But the idea that because it was a questionable hit on a quarterback and because he's playing for Greg Williams and that it's intentional, I just think it's too much of a leap. And the other thing is it was on the quarterback, and head coaches are always overly protective of their quarterbacks. And knowing Mike Zimmer the way we do, my guess is 20 minutes after the press conference, he probably regretted what he said. And I haven't heard his follow-up after. But at the end of the day, you know, the legal decide what it was. I'd be surprised if he doesn't get – he's going to get a big fine. Now, whether it's suspendable or not depends on what – if you've got a track record, they look at that. Mm-hmm. I'm not all that familiar with the kid. I don't think he does have a track record. So we'll see. But I always try to put these in the context of looking around the league. Watch the Reds. Zone. Look into every game. Mm-hmm. So a lot of hits like that, you know, and it's just, you know, it's because of the danger of the hits, obviously, that the league has suddenly become kind of the school marm looking in, trying to decide who gets their wrist slapped and who doesn't.
Right. And as you said, it's on the quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater. You know, they've decided as their guy in Minnesota. I think we're still the jury's out elsewhere.
But I think it could be their biggest problem right now. But we'll get back to that in a couple weeks.
Right. And we're not going to get bogged down on the Vikings or on one singular hit from last week anymore. Instead, we do want to push the conversation forward and do like we do every week, our Who Has the Edge segment. We will take a look at the Bears versus the Rams in each of the key four categories, starting with the Bears rushing offense versus the Rams run defense. As we talked a little bit about, Jeremy Langford got loose. Kadeem Carey got the start, what was really rather nondescript. The Rams have a terrific D-line, but they have been gashed on occasion, and they're coming off allowing 100 yards to Adrian Peterson, of course. What do you see in this matchup, Hub, and who do you give the edge to?
Well, the Rams don't play the run as well as they play the pass. Rushing the passer is what they do well, but then Jeremy Langford is not going to mistake anybody for – nobody's going to mistake Jeremy Langford for Adrian Peterson. So, you know, the Bears have still got plenty to prove. I think at best you call this one a draw, possibly a slight edge to the Rams. A lot of it depends on whether Robert Quinn is out there. Again, he's primarily a pass rusher, but he solidifies that line. So I'd call this one a draw going in.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. It should be a good even matchup in this game. Next, we look at the Bears passing offense. Of course, Jay Cutler playing the best football he's played in a Bears uniform. I don't think there's really any doubt about that at this point. And then, as you said, that Rams pass defense and one Aaron Donald, who I know you weren't overly fond of coming out. I'm guessing you've changed your tune on that a little bit. But then also, you know, those feisty corners that Howard alluded to, and Janoris Jenkins, and of course Trumaine Johnson, and they can bring pressure in waves, even if Robert Quinn still isn't healthy. What about this matchup? Who gets the edge here with two hot units?
Well, I was dead wrong about Aaron Donald. I thought he was too small. I didn't think he could make up for it with his speed and athleticism. But what people need to realize is he's only 20-25% of the story with this team. You know, Robert Quinn is one of the best pass rushing right ends in football. Chris Long is arguably the best left end as he supplements what Quinn is doing. You got Michael Brockers inside. You got Nick Fairley coming off
five
the bench.
Former first rounders.
Yeah,
on their defensive line.
And all Pro Bowl type talents. Yeah. And then in the secondary, you look at Trumaine Johnson and what he's doing. Janoris Jenkins is a nice football player. You know, guys, for all the excitement, again, Jay's playing really well. Adam Gase has done a nice job. This is still like the 26th or 27th ranked offense in the NFL. They haven't thrown the football well in terms of yardage. This, unfortunately, is a big edge for the Rams.
Yeah, it is. I'm particularly interested in seeing that Trumaine Johnson, Alshon Jeffrey matchup. Johnson does have the size. That's why he was drafted where he was. Stands a little over 6'2", and that should be a fun back and forth between two really talented players. Flipping onto the other side, the Rams rushing offense versus the Bears run defense. As Howard mentioned, Todd Gurley still amassed 90-something yards, and people were talking about how it was a down game. So that says everything that needs to be said, frankly, about what Gurley has done in his short NFL stint. But the Bears' run defense has limited the big plays, and at the same time, as you talked about earlier, that defensive line, I don't know if they have the manpower, but certainly they've had their issues in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, this is another edge for the Rams and possibly a big edge, hopefully not. Bears haven't played the run well all year long. They've made some stops here and there. When you look at some of these confusing defensive stats, because they're still giving up as many points as anybody in the league, but they rank fairly well in keeping yardage down, a lot of that has come through the passing game. Sometimes teams don't pass as much as they have to because they can run the ball well. The way Todd Gurley has played, the Rams, it's not a great offensive line, but it's coming together, particularly if they're healthier this week. This, again, is an edge to the Rams.
Keep an eye on Tavon Austin. Does work out of the backfield a lot, and big credit goes to the new offensive coordinator there under Fisher, Frank Cignetti, I believe it is, a rookie play caller, and has brought the zone scheme to St. Louis and has had a lot of success with some misdirection stuff that has challenged the Bears in the past. Wrapping up our Who Has the Edge segment, you got the Rams passing offense. Obviously, Nick Foles not getting it done right now, and the Bears pass defense, an inconsistent pass rush, an inconsistent secondary, but I think we have at least seen flashes over the past several weeks.
We have. At best, though, you got to call this one a draw if you're going to be honest, because how often does the Bears defense take the ball away? You know, the secondary, I think, has got one pick this year. Mm-hmm. You know, the Rams don't throw the ball particularly well. Nick Foles is capable of getting hot. What you have to be careful here is that while they don't consistently throw the ball well, both Kenny Britt and Chavon Austin can rip it off in big chunks. Austin does have four receiving touchdowns, and so I'm going to call it a draw because somehow, and I shouldn't say somehow, Tracy Porter is playing really well. Adrian Amos gets better every week. Bryce Callahan, again, he didn't stick out as much against the Chargers as he did the week before, but he played well in the nickel. So the secondary is coming a little bit. Bears pass rush isn't good enough. You got to call this one pretty much a draw.
Yeah, it's funny to think just a couple years ago, Nick Foles was kind of taking the lead by storm. So I think it would be a mistake to sleep on him, even though he hasn't played well lately. And as Hub said, Tracy Porter did come up with the secondary's second takeaway Monday night, and also the huge pass defense at the end of that ball game. So. That wraps up our matchup preview of Sunday Bears-Rams. At this point, we like to get a player to watch and a prediction, and we'll get everyone out here. So, Hub, a player to watch for Sunday's game.
Well, I assume we'd like it to be a Bears player to watch.
That's right.
Because I look at that Rams defense, and it's hard not to get excited about some of those kids. But in terms
maybe the
of
the way they defend,
well,
them.
I'll tell you who the Bear to watch is Jonathan Anderson, because mm-hmm. you know, much like, I don't know if anybody noticed, guys, but Leno is not a great left tackle. He's holding his own in pass protection. He got smoked by Melvin Ingram on that strip sack. He held up better late. Jermon Bushrod was dressed on the sideline all night long. The Bears have made a decision. I don't think it matters if Shea McClellan's healthy or not. I think Jonathan Anderson's going to be your starting inside linebacker with the dot on his helmet, and I think he's the guy to watch because while he was not great against the Chargers, he finally put up the kind of numbers, at least, that you've been waiting to see from McClellan and Christian Jones, and you're not getting. So I would keep an eye on Jonathan Anderson.
Interesting, and I did think that Christian Jones, call it what it is, it's a demotion. He had the green dot taken away. His snaps were eaten into, but I thought he played pretty well, responded well, had a pass defense. He was getting around the field pretty good, so it will be interesting to see what happens on the inside at linebacker when Shea McClellan is good to go. My player to watch for this game, I'm going to say Sam Acho. Now you've seen the other two outside linebackers step up. This seems to be a weekly ordeal, whether the Bears are going to be heavy in base or nickel. And we talked about Lamar Houston. Willie Young actually got the start and also played very well. So Sam Acho has done a lot of good things, one of the more consistent defenders on this team. But what I'd love to see is for him to chip in on the pass rush a little bit. It's an area that the Bears are obviously still desperate for help. So those are the players to watch. Let's get to some predictions. We're going to bring in our producers here. And Dan Mott, who do you like Bears-Rams Sunday?
Well, guys, the Rams posted 18 points in their loss to the Vikings this past week. I think they score a few more this week and edge the Bears. I'm going to say 24-14.
All righty. We got one Rams pick. Nick DeMaio, what do you think, Nick?
I think the Bears are going to win. I don't like the Rams offense at all, other than Todd Gurley. If, mm-hmm. if you can slow down Todd Gurley, the Bears have a chance. I'm picking the Bears.
All right, we got a split down the middle. Hub Arkish, who do you like Sunday, Bears-Rams?
Well, I want to be consistent and be wrong on every Bears game this season, so I'm going to see where I can go here. Although, you know, who knew the Chargers were going to have nobody show up healthy Monday night. I don't see the Bears with this Rams defense. It's tough for me to imagine. And when a team is struggling on offense, the Bears defense is something they don't mind seeing. I do think it'll be a close ball game again, though, because Cutler keeps them alive. I'm going to come up with some weird score that'll be hard to hit. I'm going to say Rams 19, Bears 18.
All right, and like you, I have picked every Bears game incorrectly, with the exception of a trip out to Seattle, and I think someone who never watched a football game in their life may have gotten that one right. Unfortunately, I'm going Rams here, too. I think on a short week, it's going to be tough to recover. I think the Rams are one of the more physical, more talented team in the league, and the Bears might have a difficult time matching that intensity, that chippiness. I also think it'll be close. I'm going to say Rams 23, Bears 17. That's going to do it for this week, guys. Don't forget, for all the best Bears news and analysis, visit chicagofootball.com. We'd also like to remind you that our podcast will be available on iTunes, so please head over and subscribe and never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Who says Black Friday should only be one day for great deals? Chevy's Black Friday sale is on right now. Check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what Dan Hampton drives. A big thanks to guests on today's show, Howard Balzer of KFan in St. Louis, our producer today, Dan Ma, our associate producer, Nick DeMaio, and of course, our closer, who was in long relief today, Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish, filling in for Kevin Fishman. He will be back next week. We hope you will be, too, on ChicagoFootball.com's podcast. Thanks for listening.